This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
You're listening to the West Ham Way podcast with Dave and X. Oi, oi!
Hello and welcome to the West Ham Way podcast with myself, Dave Walker, an ex-WHU employee. After a good time in Cyprus, we were brought back down to earth by relegation rivals picking up points and West Ham dropping two at home to Aston Villa. We talk about the game on Sunday and our trip to Iron Apra and Larnaca before getting news from X and answering questions from patrons of the West Ham Way. X, we both said it was another must-win game against Villa. We didn't win it, but we didn't lose it. And that point takes us back out of the relegation zone. With that in mind, how did you feel about the performance and the result?
How disappointed with the result, really. I mean, it was a game that we needed. As we said, we needed to win a game that if we had won, the league table would have looked a lot better than it does. A game probably on chances and sort of possession, and we should have won as well. So disappointing not to win it. As I say, I think the team played okay. Second half especially, we were better. Yeah, it's just disappointing not to get the 3 points where we could really do with them. The only saving grace is that it's so tight down there, and we're getting the point takes us out of the relegation zone. And ultimately, if that's where the season ends, where we are now, then we'll take it. So, yeah, disappointed, but it's come to be a bit of the norm at the moment, hasn't it? So,
yeah, it has. That is the case, and I was disappointed as well. The biggest thing I was disappointed with is that I think Villa were there for the taking, but as usual, in that first half, we started too slowly. As usual, no intensity, no fluidity. And yes, Villa was slow as well, but I thought we're more dominant in possession, which is a constant gripe of mine when we play from home. I don't think we exploited their high line enough in the first half. Final ball wasn't good enough, as is often the case this season. And to be honest, I kind of wasn't surprised to see us go a goal behind. I wasn't. I thought set plays were ineffective again. You know, we've gone from being up there as one of the best in the league to one of the worst in terms of conversion in that respect. Credit to Benny. I thought he was our most dangerous player. Unbelievable penalty as well, by the way. And that takes us to the second half, where I thought we improved, like you say, but again, lacked that bit of quality in front of goal. And when you're looking for another option, someone to give you something different up front, he decides not to use our Italian international marquee signing, which once again, X, has left people a bit baffled by Moyes' in-game management.
Yeah, I think the substitutions are poor. I include bringing Fornals on as well as part of that. I mean, when you're attacking Aston Villa, you need to have someone who's going to get behind that line, like you said. So I understand why he brought Cornet on, because obviously Cornet has the pace that should enable him to do that. But when he brought him on as a forward, I was as baffled as everyone else. I would have brought him on instead of 4 hours, and I would have taken Suchek off and put either either Fornals, either Ben Rama or Cornet in the centre, and then kept the other on the left wing, and it was just very, very bizarre to not bring Skamic on and to have him warming up for as long as he did, and then just to not bring him on is almost a bit insulting to him, I think. And again, we've got another top forward that's expensive, meant to be our marquee signing, that he doesn't know how to manage. And again, you've got to look at the recruitment. Who is responsible for bringing in players like him that we don't know how to play with and don't seem to want to try to play with? It's another baffling situation. I mean, I'd imagine he'll play on Thursday. And hopefully he'll get a few goals and that will kick-start him. But, yeah, I agree. The substitutions are very odd. I never understand the point of bringing Fornals on when we're chasing a win. He's the sort of player I'd bring on either earlier when you want to dictate possession a bit more or when you're actually in the lead, not when you're chasing a win, with 10 minutes to go. He's just not that sort of player. He's not quick enough. He doesn't make instant impacts enough. And, yeah, and I just thought the substitutions again were very, very bizarre, and I don't think I was the only one. I would imagine 99% of the people watching that game felt the same.
Yeah, very true, mate, and I'll make you right. I think if you're Scamacca, you're insulted by that. I mean, there's a picture of him doing the rounds on social media where he's sitting on the floor with his back against the billboard looking completely dejected. I mean, what's he warming up for throughout the whole game? And listen, I can understand... If he is finally looking to penetrate that high line from Villa, you're going to want pace to get in behind it, especially if you can time your runs right. So the logic in Cornet going up front for that very reason does make sense. But then you're getting him to warm up for this period of time. And I'm thinking maybe finally he's going to go two up top. Because again, that would have made sense to me. Get him involved. Put more firepower in front of goal. But I've seen this, and I'm assuming this is an accurate quote, but David Moyes on why Scamacca is not getting very much game time. And apparently this is a quote. His link-up play is very good. He enjoys play. We know that his physical data has got to be much better than it is. We saw Maxi doing that more than Gianluca. Gianluca has got to get himself back. As a manager, no manager wants to put out a bad team. You want to put out the players who you think are going to win for you. So you are always looking to put your best team out. I mean, it sounds like from that, there's potentially a bit of an issue on Scamacca's side. Is he applying himself in the right way? Has he got the right attitude? Is he trying hard in training? I mean, do you know of any kind of strained relations between him and the gaffer?
I don't necessarily think there's strained relations individually with him. I think the manager struggles with maybe relationships with a number of the new signings, foreign players. I mean, again, this is, please, no quoting. This is just me giving my opinion on it with some knowledge, but also some opinion as well. That I think he struggles with a few of the relationships with some of those recent signings. I think it's fair to say that Scamacca perhaps hasn't applied himself as much as some of the other players in training. Obviously, he's been coming back from a knee injury, so it's something to do with that as well in the recovery. But the thing is, when you give these quotes like that, firstly, it doesn't help the situation because you're just damning the player and writing him off and affects his confidence. And second of all, surely the most important thing for him to do to sort of show what he can do and improve these stats is to actually play him. You know, play him in Europe at Larnaca, and then if he plays well against Larnaca, it'll only be a positive. Larnaca shouldn't have been too much of a match for him. Yes, we won, so Moyes got the team right in that game, but I just think it's just strange the way he uses things like this on a player. You know, you're talking about a manager that doesn't sort of statistically pay, isn't that particularly bothered about certain like in-game statistics. You know, he obviously cares about running statistics, but now he's using them against a player. It just seems he picks and chooses when he wants to use certain things. I mean, a more alarming statistic for me, which I doubt he will pick up on, but a more alarming statistic for me is that Souček touched the ball 21 times. 21 times in the whole game, 90 minutes in midfield. He made 9 successful passes. I mean, you take a centre, you touch the ball once, twice, and maybe pass it off. This is your central midfielder, 21 touches of the ball. And actually, I think he did all right defensively, Souček, but he did the thing again where he absolutely bypasses himself out of the game, where he goes and marks himself. I watched it again. My seat is on the halfway line at the London Stadium, so I can see it very clearly what the midfielder doing. And when Declan Rice or Paqueta has the ball, he runs where the opposition is rather than the space is. And it's just ridiculous how that statistic is not picked up. You had a statistic on Skamaka, who was a Moyes signing and was a record, signing that we paid, one of the biggest monies we paid for a player, and we're using that against him. But I bet nothing's talked about with Souček. It's just strange how he picks and chooses these things.
Yeah, he does. He does seem to have his favourites, doesn't he? I mean, he's got a history of digging Benrahma out as well. Yeah. I think he was our most dangerous player. But on the subject of stats, I mean, I know Antonio wasn't playing, but did you know that Skamaka has the same amount of goals as Antonio, despite playing 7 games less than Mickey?
Well, there you go.
It doesn't see him as an option to come on and change a game.
No, exactly. And this is the thing, you talk about, like you said, I understand the point of trying to get Cornet behind the high line, but that also requires someone to be able to hold the ball up and play the ball through to the high line as well. So Skamaka could have had his benefits in that system, if we were going to try and exploit that back line. I don't understand, honestly, why we kept Souček on and didn't bring Skamaka on and Cornet at the same time. There's no point bringing one on and not the other, and it's a constant bafflement at the in-game management at times. Just, I really don't understand what is going on, how he and certain coach, or not certain coach, must be all the coaches, either he doesn't listen to them or they don't see it either, but whatever the case, these are basic things that should be being picked up on. Danny Ings, I think another statistic, we want to use statistics like Moyes is, that Danny Ings, I think, touched the ball something like 11 times. It might have even been less than that. It might have been 8 times. Wow. And, in the whole time he was on the pitch, which wasn't really his fault. Although I did think he could chase the back line down a bit more when they were passing the ball between the defender, the keeper, the defender. I understand he sort of burned himself out chasing a lost cause, but the whole team should have pushed up deeper onto their defence and onto their keeper to stop them doing it. How many times does that keeper, Martinez, take the piss by just standing with his foot on the ball, get up and stop them doing that? And a couple of times we did do that, we won the ball back. But the obvious statistic to say from that was Danny Ings was completely isolated if he touched the ball that little times, or wasn't playing well, one of the two. So why did Skamaka not come on earlier for him, if you're looking to make a change as well? I don't know. The whole thing just baffles me at times.
What did you think of the way Moyes set up for the game in general? Because you could argue that he started with two fullbacks that aren't fullbacks.
Yeah, you could argue that. I mean, I think Emerson was actually one of our best players, to be fair. So in that respect, he got the left side right. Yeah. I thought Kerr's performance was very odd. A lot of their attacks, a lot of their threat came from his flank. And again, even the goal came from his side, and he was out of position frequently. Occasionally, he did actually win the ball in difficult situations, but other times he was exposed. And again, that's an issue for us. That's the scene of the game before against Brighton. Ben Johnson massively exposed. Now Kerr massively exposed. Is it them, or does Gerald Bowen not get back enough? You've got to start analysing these things as a coaching staff and working out what is the problem, because it's the same problems every time. As you said earlier, set pieces. What is wrong with our set pieces? Every single time, it's either too weak and doesn't beat the first man, or too close to the goalkeeper. And it happens every single time. It's like that phrase, sign of idiocy is making the same mistake over and over again, expecting a different result. It's just like that. Why are we not trying something different from the corners? Whatever we've done with corners hasn't worked all season. Declan Rice is 6'3", 6'4". He should not be taking corners. You know, that should be someone like Emerson or, you know, Kerr or Bowen or someone like Tate should be able to take them. And let's be honest, they're Premier League footballers. It's not hard to kick a ball from the corner flag into the penalty box in a decent area, surely. Now, if we're talking amateur football, then maybe you might only have one or two that can deliver it decently. But we're talking about highly paid international footballers. Surely some of them can put it in the same area. And you put your taller players in the box, and you put your short, your like Danny Ings in front of the keeper, and you have the taller ones attacking, and the other ones attacking it from deep. It's just straightforward, really. And I don't understand how we keep doing the same things over and over again.
Well, especially when we were doing it so well. It's so strange. You know, it was one of our biggest strengths, set pieces, defending them as well as attacking them. But it just seems to have gone to shit, and it's the strangest thing. Look, how do you feel about the point? I mean, ultimately, I think you alluded to it, that, you know, we'll know more about the importance of this point at the end of the season. But is any point a good point at this stage, or have we dropped 2 points? If you're to call it now.
I think on the whole, the way the game went, given the nature of the league and the opposition that we've got to come, I would say it's 2 points dropped. I'm not as absolutely gutted as some people are on social media. I mean, some people need to get a grip. I've seen people in well-paid reporting jobs and people with, like, you know, decent followings on Twitter and stuff absolutely attacking the other fans just because they don't agree with their chain of thought. Yes, we're in a difficult situation, but attacking each other is not going to solve the problem, and belittling other fans because they haven't seen your ingenious insight yet is not the way forward. The way forward is to try, and as much as it pains us at the moment, to try and get these results over the line. And obviously there's only so much fans can do, but we need to try something anyway. But that's a side note. I think, yes, it's 2 points dropped. It's situations with games like that where we have to win those ones. A draw at the end of the day is not the worst result against Villa, if you want to be diplomatic, because since they appointed Emre, I think they're the third best team in terms of form in the league. So it's not something like that. It's not the worst result either. So it just means that we've got even more games now, even less games now, sorry, where it is crucial. Like, we've got to beat Southampton. We have to beat them. And these games, it just puts more pressure on the other results now. Now, you know, Moyes alluded to the point, the last four Premier League games, we've beaten Everton, beaten Nottingham Forest, drawn with Villa, and was it a draw with someone else? I'm forgetting off the top of my head. Chelsea, yeah, draw with Chelsea. So, you know, on the whole, those four results aren't bad, really. But the grand scheme of things is we're running out of fixtures. Yeah, as I say, the only saving grace is that there's a lot of other teams in the situation. And I don't think Leicester and Crystal Palace, their situation is getting enough coverage. You know, West Ham fans, of course, have got to focus on us. But this new notion that's out that you don't focus on anyone else, you only focus on yourselves. Of course, when it comes to the match, that's true. But ultimately, if there's three teams worse than you, then you're going to focus on the opposition at the moment. I think Crystal Palace haven't had a shot on target in three games. It's the longest record in the Premier League history since they've been keeping a check of this stat. Three games have not had a shot on target. Leicester hate their manager. A bit of a situation similar to us, or want him gone. You know, the Forest are not a good team. Southampton are inconsistent. There are other teams down there. I think ultimately we will stay up. There'll be a massive struggle. It's not going to be pretty, but I think we will stay up, more down to default of the other teams than credit to us.
And that's why it isn't good enough, because we are having to rely on other teams around us now. With the squad of players that we've got, it's absolutely inexcusable. And the manager and the players have put themselves into a position where they have to win these games now. You know, if we was at this point of the season and we were sitting 10th or 9th and we'd just drawn at home to Aston Villa, in the grand scheme of things, it wouldn't have been the end of the world. But it's, you know, we are running out of games, like you say. And what makes it worse is that other teams around us, and with the exception of the couple that you've mentioned, are starting to play better. and picking up points. I mean, Southampton were dead and buried, but they've picked up the odd win. They got a good result at Old Trafford that will probably help their confidence. Everton are winning games now. Leeds played well against Brighton. Bournemouth beat Liverpool. You know, is that the tonic they need to crack on now? And I look at West Ham, and I don't think we're playing that well. I don't. We're grinding results. And yeah, I suppose if you broke it down, there are some good results there. But, you know, the performances behind the results, I can't remember the last time I looked at a West Ham game and thought, God, we were absolutely superb today. Even the 4-0 win over Forest, you could argue that for a large section of that game, we didn't play well. So it is a worry. It is a worry. And here's what David Moyes had to say in his post-match interview.
What's taken on its own, today's game is just one where the ball just wouldn't go in the net because we created enough chances to win 2-3.
Yeah, I thought we'd done enough to get a result today. We just needed somebody to connect cleanly, or one of the corners, somebody get their head clean on it so that we could get a goal from it. But look, a much improved performance I felt from the last couple of games, and I'm pleased with the players for that, yeah.
I mean, it's been a long testing week, obviously, first psychologically after last weekend, and then with all the travel and a game on Thursday against the Villa team, you've had a full week. So in that regard, you must be really pleased with the application.
Well, look, Thursday, Sunday, as we've said for a long time, and we know better than MD now, it's not an easy thing. I thought the players started the game relatively well. We'd limited them. Then they got one opportunity, which we should have defended better and scored from. But I don't think today you'd have turned around and said you saw sort of any lack of effort or even their energy. I was worried that maybe they would start to fade a little bit, but I thought they stuck at it all the way through in the second half. We played particularly well at different times, and as you said at the start, maybe we could have got that second or third goal.
When a penalty gets given, first off, nowadays as a manager, your first thought is, I hope that decision sticks.
Yeah, I thought from where I was, I thought it looked a penalty kick. I thought he ran down the back of his legs. Again, I've not seen it, but I thought it looked a penalty kick from where I was at the time, and I didn't think it would get overturned. I was just a bit worried when Declan had the one late on that, the last thing you need is anything to go against you.
At the start of the season, we had a few woes from the penalty spot, but now as a manager, you must feel more confident that when we get a penalty, it's going to go in, and that was, you can't take a penalty more emphatically than that.
Yeah, Saeed took it really well. So I'm pleased. We've probably with the start of the season we missed a couple. We missed one at Liverpool. We missed one at Notts Forest. So to get a little bit more comfortable in them's good. Manuel Lanzini's taken them quite a bit for us in European football, and Saeed's done it here. So Lucas Paqueta scored for us as well from one. So we're just beginning to maybe get a bit more confident.
And Villa, right, this is a team, Villa, that have won a lot of away games recently. The way they play is a bit different. They try and draw you out and create space that way. So were you pleased with the way we didn't sort of fall into their trap? Because we did really restrict them.
Yeah, we did. We'd sort of, I wasn't overly pleased with how we'd played in the first half, but obviously we'd sort of limited them. And I thought what happened was we gave away a really, really bad goal, which got in. It caused us a little bit of problems down our right-hand side there, left. We tried to tighten up, and we slightly changed at half time to do it. And I thought we'd done better. I thought we played better. I thought we were closer to them more often. And I thought we were the better team in the second half, and a bit unfortunate not to get that win.
Obviously, the frustration, it's not a majority. There's a few people that voice their frustration, but you're as desperate as they are, aren't you? You just want things to just fall away.
We just want to keep trying to win. We want to get back to the good times, and I'm sure everybody else does as well.
And just lastly, Mikhail wasn't in the squad today. We know he picked up a bit of a knock on Thursday. Is it not too bad?
Don't know yet, but he got it in his calf, and obviously it's just come too quick. Thursday to Sunday is just too quick for him.
And that interview was also tweeted by the official West Ham account that came with the tagline, "It was a much improved performance and I'm pleased with the players." X, I've got to be honest with you, mate. I looked at that and I thought it was totally delusional. And not only that, if you look at the way he speaks, his tone of voice, his body language, I think he's totally defeated. And any form of positivity that he once again tries to project, he does it through sighs. You can see it in his eyes. I don't even think he believes it himself. I don't think he wants this job anymore. I really don't. And that's why we've discussed it's not going to happen, but it's on Sullivan to make that change, because Moyes isn't going to walk away from that compensation. Who would do? And if we don't get a win against Southampton, Sullivan needs all the pressure directed towards him, in my opinion. Because honestly, X, I don't know if you've seen it, it just, to me, looks like a beaten man now. It looks defeated.
I had seen it. I mean, in some ways, I do agree that the performance against Villa was better. I mean, you're talking about the Brighton game. So, you know, anything was going to be better than the Brighton game, wasn't it? So actually, factually, it is true. It was a better performance because the Brighton game was so shambolic that, you know, I think if you'd put me and you up front, it would have been a better performance on them at the weekend. You know, so he is technically right. It was a better performance. You know, as I said at the start, I think it's the performance where we should have really, if we want to argue it, we should have actually won. So, yeah, I think he is right in a sense, but I think the problem is he obviously realises again it's 2 points lost, that there's only so many times you can say the same thing over and over again, and people are just going to start to think, you know, whatever, you know, doesn't matter what you say. So I think he obviously is gutted about the result, and that started to come out. And yeah, it's just a real dodgy situation because I don't know what he can say or do. You know, if he comes out and he says we should have won that game, it's not good enough again, then that's just negative. If he comes out and tries and lies and says, oh, it was brilliant, we did really well, we're so unlucky, again, no one's going to believe him. So I'm not actually sure in this situation what he can say or do to turn the situation around, and that is his own fault. He's got us into this situation. But I don't know what he can say to get us out of it. I mean, the only way we can get us out of it is getting the results on the pitch. And as you said, we've got to beat Southampton. I actually think we won't lose against Newcastle. I know Newcastle won at the weekend. I know they're doing well this year, but they're not quite at the same strength they were at the start of the season. And we got a result at St. James's Park only a couple of months ago. So I do believe that we will beat Southampton and that we will get a result against Newcastle, and then things will hopefully kick on. And I know people say you've been saying this all season, but ultimately I'm lowering the expectation now. I think West Ham just need to literally, if we stay up on goal difference, that's job done for now. And I'm not saying that's what it should be as our objective, because that's ridiculous considering what our previous seasons and our spending has been. But given the current circumstances, that is what we have to aim for right now.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I do take your point, and it's a fair point about what does he say? Because things are so diabolical in our domestic season at the moment. He is in a bit of a no-win situation with what he says post-match. I get that. I was more focusing on the fact that, to me, he looks like he doesn't want to be here anymore. And one little bit I'll put towards that as well as evidence is one of the things he done incredibly well when he came to West Ham is he sat all of the players down and he presented to them that the fact that their output is not good enough. They're miles off of it in every single aspect, whether it was goals from set pieces, pitch covered, transitional play, final third. He worked them and worked them and worked them. So they went from near or actually at the bottom of the table to near the top on all those statistics. But I reckon if you look at it now, we're probably back near the bottom again. So that tells me one of two things. Either David Moyes has lost that passion to keep them somewhere near the top in all of those areas, or the players don't want to play for him, or both. And that's what worries me. And I thought that that interview was an indication of something seriously not being right here. To me, he looks like a man who doesn't want to be here, but he can't walk away because there's too much money at stake. Which I understand.
I think it's more the fact that he doesn't want to be here, the position that we're at. And I know that's like obvious, but obviously it's not like, right, I hate West Ham, I want to get out of here. It's just he's not happy in the situation. If we were to suddenly get up to 12th, be comfortable with the Conference League, then I think that changes very quickly. It's just the current situation that we're in. And it's the same for all the players and all the staff and everyone around the club, everything. You know, we just want to get out of this situation. And I think a few people, and I'm not going to dig out the fans, it's not right, because obviously the support performances need to match the fans' expectations, and therefore fans will get behind the teams. But, you know, Everton, Leeds, Nottingham Forest, I just feel like everyone there, it feels a bit more united. Whereas with us, like, I literally cannot go on social media at the moment. I cannot do it because it just annoys me so much how angry and how dramatic people are. Of course we are in a bad situation, you can't hide from that, and it's depressing, and no one wants their football club to be in the situation that they are in right now, and it is frustrating that certain things aren't being changed, but we can't change them. As I keep saying to people, it's only one person that can change it, and he doesn't appear to want to change it. So I honestly think at games, and I know it's hard when the team's not playing well, the fact that the team has to give you something, but just we need to get the team over the line. And I'm not sure that certain elements of our fan base are helping at the moment. And I'm not blaming the fans, the situation we're in, of course not. It's down to the manager, the players and the board. But I think we've done it in the past before. We've scraped the club over the line in certain situations. And this is our time to do that now. It's the only thing we physically can take hold of. And I'm not talking about away fans, because the away fans, just different kind of fish. The home, I just think that's the only thing we can control. The only thing we can control. So that's what we need to focus our attention on now.
I do understand what you're saying, especially in relation to a lot of the fans on social media being dramatic and maybe even attention seeking. That definitely exists, and a hell of a lot more accounts exist in that respect than we would like them to, that's for sure. But then there are fans that feel the same that are not necessarily dramatic. And whilst you say there's nothing we can do at the moment other than just support the football club, I think there's so many people that are genuinely scared at the prospect of getting relegated, the embarrassment and humiliation of playing in the Championship with a 66,000 seater stadium, which half of which is going to be covered up, going into work Monday morning, getting absolutely battered by your Tottenham fan mates. You know, I am one of those people, and I'm sure that there's a lot of other people in the same boat. So in terms of what do we only just go and support the players? Of course, you've got to support the players at all costs. But at the same time, that unrest amongst West Ham fans, that panic, that absolute determination and want for change is the sort of thing that does spark protests. And well, that's when you start taking it into your own hands. And I don't think we're far off that, justifiably so, X.
But that's what needs to happen then, rather than tagging in players and telling them they're shit.
Yeah,
and,
I agree.
That's what needs to happen. I saw last night people tagging Fornells into stuff. You're shit. Get out of my club. This is what I mean. And it just doesn't help. And I'm not looking for excuses for the club, because the manager's got us into this situation. And you're right. There are fans that are genuinely concerned that aren't like that. You know, I'm one. I'm, you know, as I've said before on this program, you know, I'm as passionate a West Ham fan as anyone, as are you. You know, I've missed two games all season and I've seen it for 30 years. My dad, my granddad are all West Ham fans. My livelihood depends proportionately on how well West Ham do, and so it's very important to me. But I just, you know, I feel sometimes we have to channel our energy into things that are actually going to make an impact. Slagging each other off on social media or slagging players off on social media isn't the way. We would go to the club and protest and try and get David Sullivan to take action to get Moyes out if you think that's the best strategy, or you channel it into trying in the game to create positive energy to get us over the line. Look how good we were against Seville in the atmosphere, and how good the atmosphere was in some of the European games, and when we beat like some of the top teams in the league. You know, of course that's because the team was playing well, I get that, but I do think that is important too. And you know, I'm going to get stick for this because people don't like the fans being criticised, and I understand why, but I just feel that sometimes the energy is just misdirected at times. And, you know, the bottom line is the team are not playing well. Moyes is making stranger and stranger decisions. The board should have the balls to realise that things don't seem to be improving. So either, you know, they need to just get a new person over the line to come in and change things, and they won't do that. So I get all the frustrations. I definitely do. But you've got two options as fans. You go and protest and try outside the ground, not at the game, but outside the ground, or you try and support the players while they're there. Slagging people off on social media, attacking each other, is not going to solve anything other than make you feel a little bit better in yourself, because you've vented anger. Go and punch a punch bag in the gym if you need to do that. But slagging each other on social media, I don't know, it's strange.
What do you make of the atmosphere generally at the moment then? Because David Moyes has certainly alluded to the fact that it's too negative. And the support is substandard. Is certainly what he has alluded to.
It's a difficult one to talk about, because whilst I think that's harsh on fans, because we've sold out all these games in Europe, every away game we ever have is sold out. You know, we've got fans there. The fans were supportive of the club when things are going right, and you can only support a team when you see 100% effort in. I mean that is harsh, but on the flip side, I get this opinion because a lot of my, you know, I've got friends that support football teams. You know, they're neutral to West Ham. You know, they might be Arsenal fans or Tottenham fans or Chelsea fans or whatever it may be. They're neutral to West Ham. And they have this opinion that West Ham fans are very negative the minute things don't go well. And I'm not saying I agree with that, but other people have that opinion of us. And maybe Moyes does have a point. Maybe if we get that place pumping before the games, even though we know we don't want Moyes there, we don't want Sullivan there, wherever it may be, we need our team to be a Premier League team. So for 90 minutes, let's try and get it going. The ground doesn't help. The stadium doesn't help. That's not ideal for atmosphere and football either. So there are a number of factors against us. But as I said, you've got two options. And that, for me, is the most constructive option you've got, is to try and get the team over the line for those 90 minutes. I wouldn't say the atmosphere is as terrible as David Moyes is making out. I think that's potentially an excuse, but I would say it could be better, yeah.
Well, we don't play another Premier League game until the 2nd of April, and that is against Southampton. That's obviously now our biggest game of the season, isn't it?
No, 100%. You know, all of them now, but every game is huge in the league. I think if we beat Southampton 3 days later, we play Newcastle, it put us in a good stead. If you can get 4 points from those two games, immediately the league looks better, because I just don't think the other teams will pick up that many points. I think if we can pick up steady amount of points, we'll be okay. So, but we have to beat Southampton. A draw against them is going to really put us in a very, very, even more of a dodgy position than we're already in. So I think it's essential we beat Southampton. And in theory, we should beat Southampton. Yes, they've got a bit of a, you know, slight mini revival going on, but, you know, they picked up their point against Man United, who Man United were down to 10 men from like the 30th minute or whatever it was. They are on a revival a little bit, but not so much that we shouldn't be able to beat them. We should be able to beat them, and the players need to do that. One thing I would say is whether the players respect Moyes and are in it for Moyes or not, they're in it for themselves, for each other. They don't want on their CV a relegation for West Ham. And of course, there's a few players that probably think, I can't wait to get the hell out of here. I think the majority of the squad are still focused on getting West Ham out of this situation, whether it be under Moyes or not under Moyes. And hopefully their collective responsibility to this club will get us out of the shit just.
Let's hope so, mate. Let's hope so. Well, before Southampton, we played Larnaca in the return leg of the conference, which takes me to our trip to Cyprus. And what a good trip it was, X.
Yeah, really, really good. Really, really good. Apart from Thursday evening, Friday morning, it was really, really good. Yeah, that brilliant place. And we obviously went to Iron Napa after the first couple of days. And whilst it was nowhere near the Iron Napa my friends had told me about when they used to go to AC Ferguson, it was still really good to see. And we did see the clubs from the outside, albeit not going in. But Nissi Beach was amazing. The restaurants were amazing. The weather, given the weather at home, was lovely. And obviously, a night and day in Larnaca was really good as well. A lovely place to go to an away day. Certainly beats some of the other away day locations we've had domestically.
Yeah, done it just. And we were buzzing when we got pulled out of the hat against Larnaca, and for good reason as well, because it was brilliant. And we actually arrived at night, and it started with the journey from Larnaca to Iron Napa, because that's where we stayed for the first few days, as X said. So we hired a car, and believe it or not, I think X was in a bit of shock. I actually did most of the driving in Cyprus, which, to be fair, does make a change, X, doesn't it?
Yeah, mate, I'm still in shock. I still don't know if it actually happened or didn't.
But because it was off-season in Iron Napa, it was absolutely dead. I mean, it was like a ghost town. Excuse me. It was actually dead during the journey as well from Larnaca. And I kept telling myself over and over again, remember, Dave, right side of the road, right side of the road. And that's what I did throughout the 40-minute journey to Iron Napa. And the next day, there was a bit more life. So we decided to have a little drive and see a bit more of Napa during the day. So again, I'm like, remember, Dave, right-hand side of the road, right-hand side of the road, which I did. And then I came to this roundabout. So I've driven around it the opposite way to what I would do an English roundabout. And suddenly, I'm fucking head-on with another car. And it turns out they drive the same side as the road as we do over here. I couldn't believe it. And we've gone all that time driving on the wrong side of the road.
I would guess, if you think of the journey from the airport to Iron Napa, plus the bits we've done during the day, you must have done at least 40 to 50 miles on the wrong side of the road.
All I can say is thank God it was off-season, because
thank God it was you driving, so walk of luck kicked in, and nothing came of it. If it was me, it would have been game over at the airport. I mean, I must admit, I did think when we got into the car, I don't know why I didn't challenge it more. When we got into the car, I was sitting on the side that the steering wheel should be, and you're driving. So it did come into my head. I actually did think it, but then I just maybe because I was tired, I didn't question it after that. And you were the driver, so it's your responsibility.
Yeah, it's over to me.
Yeah.
Oh, mate, I tell you. And it was funny, really, because when we came head on with that car, it was a woman driving like an SUV, and the expression on her face was blank, really, as if to say, fucking hell, the English are back again. You know what I mean? It was funny, wasn't it? She let us go, and then at that point, the penny dropped. But it was funny, because there wasn't much to do in Iron Napa, apart from a couple of things. And one little absolute gem that we uncovered, X, was a lovely little haunt for a fry-up in the morning we were there.
Yeah, brilliant. And, lovely fry-up. I missed the fry-up now. I've had my toast this morning. There was no way near the standard that we got in Iron Napa, that's for sure.
Yeah. Oh, God, no, it was lovely. Really, really nice. Not far from where we were staying as well. And I remember the first morning we went there, and I put my West Ham shirt on, because there wasn't many people about, to be fair. And it's a nice enough place. And we've gone to have this fry-up. Lovely fry up, nice fresh orange juice. And then we're walking back, and I said to you, God, it's lovely. It's got a lovely feel about it. I said, isn't the Cypriot people lovely? Fuck me. Within about 30 seconds, this car has screamed past us, and someone shouted out, fuck you, West Ham.
Well, it's Thomas Suchet. What's he doing?
Well, I remember saying to you at the time, fucking hell, it's nothing I haven't said myself this season. But there were lovely people there, and it was a really nice day. And of course, for me, the favourite part of that was Nissi Beach, because it's a world famous beach, and we had to make a point of going down there. And whilst it was snowing over here, it was really nice weather over there. So we've gone down to the beach, me and X, and I've headed off to get changed because I needed the toilet as well. So I've got changed and I've come back, and there's this family of four that are sitting probably less than 10 yards away from X's sunbed, but X is facing towards the sea, but they're facing towards X because that's what the best part, they're getting the sun. So I said, right, mate. I said, you're going to come in the sea then? Because the sea was unbelievable, to be honest with you. It was like bathwater to look at. And he said, yeah, I will. I said, you just got to get these trunks on. I said, just stand up and put the towel around you and then whip your shorts off and put your trunks on. So he said, no, I'm going to lay down and do it. I said, mate, I said, that's a risky strategy there. I said, you know, if you get a strong gust of wind or whatever, I said, that family there are watching your every move because I can't watch anything else. They're like 9 yards away. So he argued it and he said, no, I think I've got it sorted. I've got it sorted. So he's laying down, right? And he's got his towel over him. Just remember, it was awkward because he's taking his shorts off. The eye contact with, I wasn't comfortable with at all, to be honest. But then the family are watching you as well, right? So he's taking his shorts off and he's made a joke of saying, oh, there's a point of no return now. And then all of a sudden, I see this sort of fear in his eyes where the penny's dropped and he's gone, Dave, help me. I said, what? What's the matter? He said, I can't reach my trunks and the fucking towel's going everywhere. I'm having to keep it over my bollocks. I said, I can't get to the trunks. I can't get my trunks on. I said, you're having a fucking laugh, aren't you? And he's like, please, Dave, he said. And I've looked at the family. They've looked at me. I've looked at X. Fucking hell. Who thinks he's going to get filled in by this family's dad for exposing himself to his children, by the way. So fucking hell, I'm going to have to do it. So I've got on my knees, right? Fucking on my knees. X's towel is flapping about all over the place. I've got this big hairy arsehole growling at me. I'm so close to his cock, I can smell it. And I felt like...
You made me sound like an absolute minger. That's quite a bit of an exaggeration.
I'm just painting the picture, mate. Honestly, it looked like we were giving people the worst peep show in history. It was just And eventually, after wrestling these trunks on him, we walked towards the sea, half expecting to be arrested by the Cypriot wheel. It was a fucking nightmare. And then we swam in the sea, which, to be fair, was a gorgeous sea, wasn't it, X? But maybe a little bit on the cold side.
Yeah, rather nippy, to say the least. And so, it wasn't my most flattering of moments. Thankfully to the family, they didn't seem that bothered. But, yeah, it was a worrying moment when I thought, I can't get my shorts on here. So I had no other option but to stand up and be naked. Has you not been there? I'd have been in big trouble.
And then
the water was rather nippy, to say the least. I mean, lovely when you're in there, but gosh, yeah, it took a bit of courage to get myself in there.
It was cold. Well, as most of you know, X once nearly drowned in Ibiza after getting swept under by the most spontaneously massive wave I've ever seen. And believe it or not, a patron heard that story, told me that this type of wave actually has a name, and it's called a sneaker wave, right?
About right. It's the right name for it, definitely.
And I Googled this, and a sub search to that search, right, was how do I survive a sneaker wave? And I'll read it to you, mate, because next time this could save your life, right? Okay. This is what it said. This is an extract from Google on how to survive a sneaker wave. It says, if you're dragged by a wave, plant your walking stick, cane or umbrella as deeply into the sand as you can. Hang on until the wave passes. If you are carried out by a sneaker wave, don't panic. Swim parallel to the shore until you can swim in safely. So hopefully those words will resonate with you, mate, and you keep that with you.
Oh, I wish I'd had my walking stick and umbrella with me. Why on earth would you have your walking stick and umbrella with you if you're in the sea? That's the worst bit of advice ever.
Actually, I don't know who wrote that. It's obviously someone that's never been anywhere near a sneaker wave, to be fair.
Yeah, exactly.
We literally wouldn't do any of those things if we were caught in one again.
There's no way you'd be able to swim parallel, because by the time you realise what on earth was going on, you're being thrown halfway down the beach anyway. You're going to suddenly swim off. I had no knowledge it was coming, knowledge what had happened once I was being thrown around like I was in a bloody washing machine. And then the only thing I could do is hold my breath, pray it would come to an end. And as soon as I kind of had any form of stability, stand up. That's the only advice I would give anyone. And for someone that has experienced a sneaker wave before, that is the only advice I think that would work.
Yeah, I just imagine you, because it's right, your analogy of being in a washing machine is absolutely right. That's how much you're being thrown about. And I just have this image of you finally catching some breath above water, shouting, Dave, quick, get me an umbrella.
Yeah, exactly.
You just wouldn't think to do that. I don't know who wrote that. Maybe someone was taking the piss, but I don't know. But anyway, we eventually left Iron Napa, probably on the Cypriot sex offenders register, and headed for Larnaca. And we got checked in with a few hours to kill before the game. And we're sitting on our balcony, soaking up the sun. And X said, I feel like getting drunk before the game. Have you got any vodka? Well, I mean, that's like asking McDonald's if they've got any burgers. So I gave him a bottle and he's pouring out half and half measures, right? Now, by your own admission, you know, you're not a big drinker, right?
But that's, not anymore, no.
No, not anymore. But they're my sort of measures, right? That's what I'm used to. But what he's done is treating these drinks like shots and he's necking one after the other. I said, mate, you've got to slow down because that's going to catch up with you, that is. And he didn't listen. And before you know it, he's dancing on the balcony, heckling people as they walk past, chanting West Ham songs at the top of his voice.
I forgot about that. West Ham chants, actually, I can remember them now.
You were loving life, mate, literally loving life. Well, that lasted about an hour before he was absolutely bollocksed, right? And here's a snippet of our conversation in the cab on the way to the ground.
That's Phil. Do you feel like you want to be sick?
Yeah.
You do? I'm not having it. It's my fault, by the way. There's no way. I'm not taking fucking... I'm not taking accountability on that. There's no way. No, what do you mean I have to? There's no way. You drank it so quick. Why'd you drink it so quick?
You did it.
I didn't do it. I gave you the vodka and you made... basically, I gave you the bullet. You shot yourself.
Oh. Hello, mate.
He said we're very close.
And for those of you that saw the burger review in Larnaca, you would have noticed that X wasn't there. And it was because he was throwing up his weight in the flower beds by the ground. I mean, fucking hell, mate, that was a dark, dark time for you, wasn't it? I mean, you were literally Vladimir Putin. but you sobered up for the game, to be fair. So you did pull it round.
Mate, it was a recovery of Hulk Hogan proportions, I think. Seriously, like literally it's the equivalent of Andre the Giant, Earthquake, Ultimate Warrior, Bret the Hart, Pitman Hart, literally everyone you can think of, Big Boss Man, battering me over the head with steel chairs, slamming me into a table, you know, kicking me in, like just literally doing me in. And then all of a sudden, you know, he goes to drop my hand and it holds up, it shakes, and I go back. Or the rest, because I made it to the game. I remember most of the game. There are a few hazy bits, I'm not going to lie. I remember most of the game, and I got to the game, and I got home from the game, and I wasn't in trouble again to about 3 p.m. in the morning, where I suddenly got all sat up in my bed and thought, oh, this feels like I'm on some kind of, like, you know, that horrible feeling, like a Ferris wheel type thing.
It's horrible. You know,
yeah, and it felt like I was on, like, kind of a boat and stuff. And I thought, oh, God, this is not going to end well. And needless to say, it didn't. But thankfully, because of that, I was all right in the end. I wasn't too bad. But one thing I would like to question is, we obviously went to a shop in between we're getting home from the game and going to the hotel. And you allowed me, as the mate looking after me, to purchase... Fucking hell, there's a massive wasp just flown at me. Sorry. Where the hell did that come from? Sorry. Jesus. Sorry about that. You allowed me to purchase a cold burger, a frozen cold burger. I might add tomato juice as in a drink, which I don't even like. What else did I have in there?
Did I?
Well, that was in my bag, so God knows what.
Frozen burger and tomato
a frozen burger, tomato juice. There was a bottle of milk, which wasn't milk. It was like something that was just disgusting.
I remember that.
No idea what that was. And so I think there was a bag of crisps, which I woke up with all over my face. And I think maybe a box of Toblerone. Something like that. The most random selection of items, anyway. That was not great. So, and apparently, we saw a few people like Dan and Richie. Is that his mate's name? Yeah.
Don't
and
make,
Jamie, I did know that. They apparently I was like they unrecognisable from my usual self. So I do apologise to anyone else that may have encountered me in that time there. And needless to say, the next away day in Europe, if we have one, I will not be doing. I want to get drunk again, but I will not be doing the proportions I did.
No, that might be wise. But I mean, in terms of the burger review, mate, we've got a new team that are bottom of the table now in Larnaca. I mean, I don't know if a burger is alien to them, but they gave me what seemed to be some sort of a Subway roll with some cut up burgers in it and about 3 tonne of tomato sauce. So, unfortunately, the average score with a little bit of help from some lads was 5, and that does. Mm. See them bottom of the table, unfortunately, for Larnaca. But despite that, mate, all in all, it was a really good trip, wasn't it?
Yeah, amazing trip. And, you know, as much as people were starting to get very personal towards David Moyes, you know, if it weren't for him and turning this club around, well, yes, it is time for him to go, I think, but we wouldn't have these, we've had these memories. So, you know, I think we should go a little bit easy on the personal insults. But, great away day.
Good stuff. Right, it's that time again.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.